Okay, I'm going to go ahead and get started here. So the first thing is just to see if there are any comments on the agenda. I will tell you we've had one request from Anders to put another item on the agenda, but I don't actually see him here today. So let me just propose adding it. This is credentialing in the U.S. government. He had an article he wanted to talk about. I would propose putting that as a maximum 10 minutes and right before we discuss the spec issues. We will, of course, skip that if he's not here. Does anyone have any objections to inserting that agenda item?
I don't have an objection. I haven't had a chance to read it. I don't know if anybody else has, and if no one has been able to read it, we probably won't have much of a discussion on it.
Yeah, I just wanted, I mean, he asked for it, and I figured, you know, he'd have an opportunity to just say what he thought was relevant about it, because it's not immediately obvious to me what he'd want to discuss. So.
Yep.
Okay, let's go ahead and insert that again.
I'm actually really interested to just give my background, my introduction. So I'm a clinical geneticist by training, and I've done a bunch of different startup companies. I'm also an advisor to the American Board of Medical Specialties for the Database and Information Technology. And so certainly verifiable claims for credentialing is certainly something I'm very interested in. So I think it's a great topic.
Okay, thank you. Actually, that was the next item, was introduction. So thank you for that. Perfect. Is there, I don't know if we have anyone else joining us for the first time today. Anyone? Nope. Okay. Thank you. And again, thank you, John. So, okay, next item is, this may not come out right. So reviewing the new location of the use cases and data model specifications. So they've been moved to different GitHub repositories, and I have all the links there in IRC now. If you haven't had a chance to look at it, please take a look at those. You actually don't need to look at them right this instant, at least not until we get to the discussion, if you haven't had a chance to. But I do want to ask first, is there anyone who tried to find them and were unable to for some reason, or who needed some help? No. Okay, great. All right. So the next thing then, Manu, yes. You're up.
Yeah, just really quickly, for those that are new to how we do stuff at W3C in a working group, clearly we're not a working group yet, but you usually try to move us. I'm giving some background on the why we move the specs. Typically, you the way W3C does things now is you move each spec to its own GitHub repository, and it gets its own issue tracker on GitHub. The issue trackers are linked off of the specs, so if you ever have an issue with the spec or want a new feature in the spec or just want to comment on it, usually the way you do that is by adding an issue in the issue tracker. Anyone that's got a GitHub account can do that. If not, you can send an email to the mailing list and ask for an issue to be created for you. But we did this move in preparation for us then giving these repositories, handing these repositories over to a working group. So we're currently a task force and are operating in a quasi-official capacity. But the real work starts when the working group starts, and so that's why everything's kind of been moved around over the last couple of weeks. The other thing to note is that I think Phil Archer is adding the use cases as a deliverable for this group, meaning the working group. It wasn't before, but he thought it would be good for this group to the working group to continue incubating and cleaning up the use cases along with the data model and representations. So that's just some background on why we made the changes we did. And the specs haven't changed. It's just they have new homes.
Thank you, Mario. Any questions from anyone on that? Okay. All right. The next thing is just a call for review. Now that we actually have these in a location that we're, I should say a new location that we're happy with, we'd like to encourage everyone to review those documents. And they are the ones that I put the links in before. Please do, over the next 1 to 2 weeks, please do review them and add issues into the issue trackers for any questions or suggestions that you have. Now is definitely the time to do that. And what we're going to do is then we'll go through them as we have time on the calls. So is there before? So what I'm going to actually go to next is actually just a brief review of how you add issues in GitHub, because I had one question about that. Is there anyone who has just any questions so far about what it means to do a review? Actually, I'll just say any review is helpful, right? So any review of any sort. We're actually looking for comments, right, Manu? I mean, we're looking for comments of any sort at this point. So if you don't like the general direction, we would really want to know that now. But I think what's more likely is that there'll be sections that are obviously to you incomplete or are wrong in some way, and we definitely want to know about that sooner rather than later. Okay. So next, what I'd like to do is I'd like to talk briefly.
I do have a question, if I may.
Sure.
This is Joe. So in a previous, I remember it was in an email or in the notes on a previous meeting, someone mentioned the use cases for CSV on the web. And so I'm going to include that in my review just to understand what other groups are doing. I'm wondering if there are any other exemplars that I might be pointing to of other W3C use cases.
Yeah, this is Shane. The Digital Publishing Interest Group actually has a really rich use case document that I'll try to find a reference for right now.
Okay, perfect.
Okay, any other questions?
I have just another comment. This is John. So I'm on the HL7 Clinical Genomics Working Group, and we use FHIR, and so there's a lot of overlap, and I believe HL7 is a member of W3C. At least we use the W3 specs quite a bit.
Okay. Great, thanks. Okay, I want to just talk briefly about adding issues in GitHub.
Hold on.
Again,
Dan, sorry, on the queue. I wanted to really quickly, could we get some volunteers to get people down on the record and kind of hold them to doing reviews? Because typically when we ask for reviews, you know, it doesn't happen unless people are kind of on the record as saying they're going to do a review. So could we have some volunteers that say they're going to do a review over the next 2 to 3 weeks?
Yes, I will. I'm already familiar with our use case document, but I want to look at these other sources and make some suggestions based on these other examples.
Yeah, and this is Johnny. I actually have quite a few suggestions.
Great.
It's Adam Myers, you can put me down for the review.
Awesome. Thank you. Awesome. Great.
Okay.
And then issues in the issue tracker. Go there and open issues as you find them in the spec. Please write them down in the issue tracker. Otherwise, they may get lost.
Okay. So any other questions or comments or thoughts before we move on to looking at the issues in the issue tracker? Okay. Again, I had one question about how to use GitHub. I would say, you know, any developer who's used it knows enough to work in this group and then some. Basically, especially for issues, it's fairly simple. Right now, every single one of you, even if you do not have a GitHub account, should be able to actually go to the link that I pasted in IRC. And that's to look at the issues. So that should be publicly visible. In order to add an issue, you are going to have to create an account. That's fairly simple. It's just like almost any online service today to create an account. When you do that, then you go to, again, this link, which is for the issue tracker. And you'll see, if you go there now, that in the upper right there is a button that you can click on. And when you do that, you'll have an option to create both a title and a description. Please do both. It might sound obvious that, you know, you put in a title, you think that title explains everything, but it's usually helpful to give more of a description. And then you click Submit New Issue. And it really is that simple. Now, one of the things that you're going to notice for the existing issues is that many of them have labels associated with them. They'll say editorial or privacy or security or whatever. You know, every group ends up with its own process as it goes forward. And this group, Manu, I know you have sort of a way in which you've been working so far. I'm going to suggest at this point that when you put an issue in, I would not encourage you to label it. That's something that the chairs and editors are going to have to go through and sort of prioritize the order in which we discuss anyway. And so whether you label it or not, we may change the label. So it's up to you whether you want to do that or not, but I'm just saying it's not really required for you to put labels on there. I think the labels are for they are for people to be able to search quickly for particular topics or, again, things that may be substantive changes or they're probably not going to be searching for editorial unless you're editing a document. But the point is, don't worry about that. If you don't know what to put for labels, you can leave that. Now, as far as discussion goes, this is one that groups vary on, exactly how they handle the discussion issue. The mailing lists are archived typically. Manu, yes, that's right. The ones we're using should be archived as well, right?
Correct.
Okay. So I've been in groups where they've attempted to force people to have their discussions on the mailing list, but when you're using GitHub as well, that inevitably fails because it just makes a lot of sense to have much of your discussion on the issue right there in the issue tracker. So I would say for now, go ahead and feel free to discuss an issue in the issue tracker. One of the things that the chairs and editors will be looking for is any sign that there's a significant issue that we are concerned that people in the group are not aware of or not sufficiently aware of. And at that point, we may send a reminder to the mailing list or encourage some discussion on the mailing list. That's my suggestion. Manu, I haven't had a chance actually to talk with Richard and Matt yet because of each of us having different travel schedules for the last few weeks. But that's my suggestion for how we start. Do you have any comments or disagreements on that based on what you've seen in this group recently?
No, I mean, so we have not been using the issue tracker in this group, and we're going to have to change that as we move into a working group. One of the things that I think people should do is there are two ways of doing this. One of them is you tie the issue emails to the mailing list. So every time somebody comments on an issue, an email is sent to the mailing list, so people have the option of communicating via the mailing list. Or via the issue tracker, you can do both. There's a way to set it up so that it doesn't matter If you respond to the mailing list or respond to the issue tracker, your comment will come through. But what most groups tend to do is they tend to tell the working group participants to go and subscribe. They go and click the star thing on GitHub. So go and star. I can't get the link because they did something funky.
I think it's the watch button.
Okay.
The star button.
So be notified of all conversations. Put yourself into watching mode for this repository, and then you will get emails every time somebody makes a comment on an issue or does a pull request. And then you can use your email filtering software to put that into a particular folder. So I suggest that here's the downside.
Yeah, and the
with doing that is it excludes people that don't know, that are not on the calls and don't know that they're supposed to be doing that. So, like, for example, like, you know, Tim Holborn in Australia and Anders Rundgren and, you know, Pindar Wong, they're just not going to see any of this discussion happening, and they may have something to say about it. So that's one of the it winnows the list of people actively having the discussion, whereas on a mailing list, you know, we have like 150 people on the mailing list. Not all 150 of them are going to sign up for the issues, so they're going to see not much happening on the mailing list when there's all this discussion happening in GitHub. So that's kind of the downside of that. But again, you know, it's up to the group to decide how they're going to operate. And some groups like winnowing down the number of people talking about issues, and other groups like opening it up.
Okay, John, Tilly, I think you're next.
Good. My question is about, in addition to reviewing the documents, I assume we should also make ourselves aware of all of the current issues so we're not duplicating, or is that not a concern and that will get merged in at a later point?
It's a good practice that saves the editors a lot of time. So if you are going to do a pretty solid review of the specs, please look through the issues first before adding a new issue.
And I will add, as actually one of the editors also, that I agree that that's helpful. If there's any concern, if you have any question, though, about whether your issue has been raised or not, please enter it. Okay? If you're not at all sure, then if you're not absolutely sure, then go ahead and enter it, because even though duplicates are some work to check, I'd rather not lose anything important. Let's see. Anything else, John?
No, that's fine. Thank you.
Okay. So the other comment I wanted to make on that is that once you actually, if you say that you want to watch all new issues, just warning people who aren't used to this, or alternatively, if we end up tying the mailing list, tying GitHub to the mailing list, it's very easy to drown in emails. This is something I've seen actually in a number of groups. Because the email traffic from GitHub can be quite extensive. I'll just point that out. So be prepared to filter, and even with filtering, it can get a little tricky, especially if you want to be able to catch personal mentions with the @ sign, as opposed to just issue creation and deletion. But this is something that we'll monitor over time and see how it's going. If for some reason people are missing out on discussions, then we'll adjust the process to make sure that they get included. If alternatively we find that people are drowning in emails or they can't find mentions that are relevant, then we can make adjustments there as well. Okay, any comments or questions about that? Manu, yes. Go ahead. I was going to talk about the next steps after that, but go ahead. Yep.
Okay. Are you going to cover how we process issues? Like, we don't make decisions on GitHub unless they're editorial. If they're substantive, we try to have a call and make sure that everyone agrees. Like we have consensus on the decision rather than making the decision in GitHub. Were you going to cover that?
Well, so I actually was not going to make that statement yet because you and I and the other two chairs have not had that discussion about how that's going to happen yet. So I didn't want to give a misinformation about how that would happen. So even though we're going to be having some discussion today, I was not going to make any assumption about any resolutions today. Now, what I will say is that absolutely the intent in all W3C groups, and in fact it should be in any standards group, is to determine consensus. And so there is not going to be any arbitrary determination by chairs of a consensus, you know, especially when there are obvious disagreements. Okay, so that is a statement I am prepared to make today. And you know, feel free to challenge me on it going forward. I think again, exactly, you know, there's something written in the community group definition about, you know, how you declare consensus. And again, usually groups vary a little bit, but whenever there is a clear disagreement, you don't have consensus, okay? And you go into more substantial discussions to try to resolve that. Is there anything you would like to add to that, Manu?
No, and I think you're right. We don't want to say anything. When the working group fires up, they're going to make their own set of decisions on how the group operates. Typically, what we've seen is that because of kind of the heavy email traffic and because not everyone can pay attention at all times, when the editors and the chairs feel that there's a substantive decision being made, they will put an agenda item on the call so that everyone has kind of fair warning that we are going to be making a decision on X, and this is the likely direction that decision is going to take. At least that's what I've experienced in a number of different working groups. So you, if you, for whatever reason, are completely overloaded with email, you will probably still not miss the really important decisions that are being made in the group.
Yeah, the one good modification I might make to that, Manu, is that, in some groups, because of time zone differences, it's very difficult for some people to attend. Mm-hmm. And so we have to be careful about whether any decision on a call is actually declaring consensus. So I agree that if there is disagreement, then the goal of the chairs and the editors is to have those disagreements discussed in a call. That is the best way typically to resolve disagreements, not through email. It's through actual discussion. But in the end, we may have to look at how we handle disagreements that come from people who might not be able to attend the call. So that's the only modification I would make.
Mm-hmm.
Manu.
Yep.
Let's see, who's next? Shane.
Hi, yeah, just a couple of things. One, I agree with you, Daniel, that it's a bad idea to, you can get lost in the morass of emails. I know I do on a lot of these GitHub discussions. Coming in really late on a discussion because you weren't tracking it with some, you know, strong objection isn't a way to win friends and influence people. So, if there's a topic you feel strongly about, you should probably try to monitor it. But the other thing is, a lot of working groups, and as you say, rightly, Manu, the working group will make decisions about how it operates, but a lot of working groups decide on a call for consensus process that says, you know, decisions made at a teleconference then go out for a, you know, 2-day or 5-day call for consensus or whatever via email just so that if anybody does miss the meeting, they can object if they need to. That's fairly common at the W3C.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And in fact, that's one of the reasons why I did not want to make the statement today about exactly how we were going to handle consensus. Again, this is, I just want to have a brief discussion with Matt, Richard, and Manu about this, and that is one of the likely processes we would include or consider including, depending on how contentious discussions get. So, thank you. Okay, any questions from anyone else just regarding issues? I'm not talking about pull requests yet. Okay, I do want to make one statement now about pull requests. So for those of you who are not used to using GitHub, pull requests are the way that you actually propose very specific changes to a document. And you actually essentially edit the document and push that edit up such that it can be examined by others, including the editors. And ultimately, once it's worked to everyone's satisfaction, then it can be just applied to the document. That is something that the editors will definitely be encouraging people to do. I know that some people have never done this before. There wasn't time today to prepare a discussion or a presentation on sort of the basics of doing pull requests, but the other two chairs had asked for that. So I'm not going to be available next week. What I'm going to tentatively suggest is that in 2 weeks, that's something that I will do on the call. I will just give a very, very brief overview along with pointers and so on as to what to do. There's definitely material that people can read in advance. Manu, maybe you and I can talk about what would be best to send out for people to look at. So if we have a discussion today and one of the and at some point I or someone else says, hey, why don't you make a pull request for that? If you don't know how to do that, then don't panic, okay, because we will get to that. And if you do know how to do pull requests, great, wonderful. Feel free to go ahead. Okay. So last item, I'm sorry, not the last item. I had added for Anders this credentialing.
So, hold on, Dan, sorry, on the queue.
I'm sorry.
Just yeah. one thing to add to that. If you don't know how to do a PR, and you have no interest in learning how, or it's for whatever reason you can't do it, it's totally fine. You can always just raise an issue. And if you can't even raise an issue for whatever reason, like some companies don't allow access to GitHub, some like banks and financial institutions and medical institutions don't allow access to GitHub, you can send an email to the mailing list talking about what you're concerned about, proposing some text to change, or just raising an issue. And the editors or someone in the group will get it into the issue tracker, or they will figure out some text to put in as a PR. The best way to get your changes in, though, is through a pull request, because it requires the least amount of thinking by other people. So basically, if you do all the thinking and put in a solid proposal as a pull request, it's very easy for the group to integrate that into the spec. If, on the other hand, you have a vague concern about three paragraphs of text in the spec and you don't quite know how you want that resolved, the likelihood of your issue being resolved is fairly low, right? Because you're not telling us what you want changed. You're not being specific. So in all of these cases, be specific about the change that you want, about your concern and the change that you want. It's okay to send an email to the mailing list, but pull requests are definitely preferred.
Thank you, Mona. That is an excellent point. One of the things, we're still fairly early in the process, right? We don't have a working group yet. There is a point in that process where, and it's not now, okay? This is much later. Where I think it is more likely that there will be a requirement that changes be precise, right? And that's reasonable when you get toward to where you have a document that's getting close to finalized. we are not at that point yet. So it is, again, it's still fine to send issues, to do issues rather than pull requests right now, but as Money says, specificity helps. Okay, so with our remaining time, let me just make sure there's no one else on the queue. How about I not put myself on the queue? That was... was bad. Okay. All right. Now what I thought we would do is we can start looking at some of these issues. They're not prioritized yet. The intention of the chairs is that we will begin prioritizing the order of discussion. And just so you understand, the reason for that is to do two things. One is to be able to make progress. So if there's some issue that is stymieing everyone, then usually it's not a matter of more discussion. It's usually a matter of more thinking. If that happens, we may encourage people to think some more before we return to it. So we do want to make progress, but we also want to make sure that any issues that are major in terms of the direction of the documents gets discussed early rather than late, so we can have the issues out on the table. But for today, since we're just getting started, the issues were just migrated over recently, we're just going to start at the beginning, and we'll just have initial discussions and thoughts and see how far we get. By the way, I should point out that I've just skipped the issue from Anders since I haven't seen him on the call. Okay, so if you go to the issues list, it's the same one we've been looking at. And start with number one, nesting signatures with JWT. So I'm just going to read it out. I know you guys can read it as well. There's a concern that nesting multiple signatures with JWT results in an exponential increase in the amount of data that needs to be stored. Each envelope needs to encapsulate the entirety of the signed data as a base64 encoded blob. This is an issue for endorsements, countersignatures, and M of N signature schemes. How will nested signatures be supported using JWTs? Well, I guess I picked a tough one to start with, huh? Yeah, I know. I was just thinking, oh my gosh, this is quite a complex one. But hey, you know what? We've got 20 minutes, and we might as well get started. Anyone who has thoughts, please put yourself on the queue or request to be added to the queue. Manu, you're first.
Yeah, so there's this, you know, requirement that, well, not a requirement, there's this, we've had pressure try and figure out how the verifiable claims data model works in JWTs. I think this is a healthy, good pressure to have because JWTs are out there. There are a lot of libraries for them. There's been a lot of thought that's been put into at least security aspects around JWTs. So we have some other requirements in the work that we do, though, that makes using JWTs a bit more challenging. And one of those things is nesting signatures, right? So that's where this issue came from. You know, people said, hey, well, can you do verifiable claims in a JWT? And we said, yeah, the data model should be flexible enough that it should work in a JWT. And for basic, verifiable claims, we've figured out a way of kind of expressing it in a JWT. The issue comes in when we use these verifiable claims in higher order protocols. So, for example, if we have a protocol that does counter signatures, like you have a set of verifiable claims that has been signed by the Department of Motor Vehicles, and then you want another organization to effectively countersign that Like, for example, let's say you want the federal government for some reason to countersign a driver's license, or you want a notary to countersign the driver's license, then all of a sudden, with linked data signatures, it's pretty simple. You just tack that signature object onto the end of the data, and you're good. With JWTs, since everything's base 64 encoded, you can't do that because the signature and the base 64 encoded blob kind of stick together. And so you have to have this bigger encapsulating format to do that. So this issue is really about, you know, what exactly does an endorsement or a countersignature or a set of signatures look like in the JWT model. And that's it. I mean, unfortunately, it's a fairly open question. And the hope is to gather some thoughts in the GitHub issue. So people make proposals on ways we could do countersignatures or set signatures or MMN. That's one thing we could do. Or we could decide that we're just not going to support endorsements and countersignatures and MMN signature schemes in version one. These are just out of scope because the JWTs, it's too hard to do in JWT. So that's kind of the series of kind of questions and proposals we have to work through to make progress on this issue.
Johnny? Johnny Crunch, you're up.
You may be muted.
Yeah, I think UPort, I think, solved this by using IPFS, and you actually wrap the JWT around the hash of the content. And so it doesn't get as unruly. In fact, I'm looking at the data model for UPort right now, and I can't remember exactly how they implemented. But it is base64 encoded JWT, but it's that entire idea is actually you're allowed to Web of Trust countersign assertions being made. So it has to be nested.
That sounds like a great thing to add into the issue.
Yeah, I can add that. And I think that's one of my comments during the review, but also I think I'll add another issue as far as using IPFS for the context of the model that you're using. Because I think that's a different issue. But my point being is that I think I'm trying to find, because actually I used during a recent hackathon, the open source library for UPort, and as I recall, it was the hash of the document, and the document could be stored anywhere. It could be S3 bucket or IPFS, but it really was a really elegant way of nesting claims.
Cool. So there was a comment from Greg on IRC about how do we capture discussion, and he was suggesting capturing discussion in the issue, perhaps after the fact. This is, again, something that chairs can talk about the best way to do this. I just want to comment on that before I go back to the issue at hand. As far as if we make a decision, okay, so if there's actually a consensus decision, then that will definitely be recorded, absolutely. As far as discussion, if there's some obvious simple comment, then one of us may put that in there. But I think definitely for a more significant comment or example from someone like the one we just heard, it'd be better for the person who made that to put it in the issue if possible. Just because they have the background. So that's why in this particular case I was encouraging John to go ahead and put that in the issue directly. Now with respect to the issue, one of the questions I wanted to ask Manu was, so this is an issue that has to do with JWTs. But I suspect that depending on how it gets resolved for JWTs, that could have an impact on the general data model structure. So if it turns out that there is some kind of wrapping structure that needs to be created, in order to actually have parallel capabilities across all of the different syntaxes, we might end up needing to create such a wrapper that other syntaxes would use as well, even though it is not perhaps as efficient for them. Is that something that you were thinking about as well, Manu, on this?
So we've got a queue, and I'll add that to what I respond to.
Okay, thanks. I keep hitting plus. I don't know what my problem is. All right, Dave Longley, you're next.
Right. My comment would be simply that I think we should probably try and specify something with JWT, even if it seems like it's not a fantastically optimal solution to the problem, and we can let people decide if that they want to use that technology to solve their problem. It might be that that works best for their tool chain and they're willing to deal with whatever inefficiencies are there. I don't think that as a result of that that we should not support certain schemes, or that we should necessarily, maybe as Dan just suggested, bloat those other schemes when they can solve the problem more elegantly. So we might want to separate concerns out here between the data model and the signature and the container in some way that allows this stuff to evolve over time such that people can choose the solutions that work the best for them. Without fragmenting the whole space, obviously we're building a standard here, but there might be one or two different signature schemes that work in different scenarios based on whatever scheme you're pursuing.
Okay, thanks. John Tibbett, you're next.
Thanks. I think it's mostly been answered just now by Dave. Putting it into a question, is there a requirement that all of the signature schemes have to have the same capabilities? JWTs are fine for sort of flat spaces, but they don't handle a number of, as the data model gets more complex, as been mentioned, you run into a number of problems with them. So is that something we need to commit to doing, or can we just say JWTs are fine for those who have a simple signature scheme? So that.
Okay, Manu?
Right, so let me try and respond in reverse order to John Tibbetts first. We can say anything we want as long as the group has consensus around it. So we may decide, one of the decisions we may make is, JWTs are fine for flat data, fairly flat data, but the second you have like a graph of data, it becomes a bit more difficult. The second you try to do endorsements, it becomes a bit more difficult. We can say that. Dan pointed out, we can try and extend the core data model with extensions to try and make it so that you can do things like endorsements and counter signatures in JWT. I think all those options are kind of open to us. I think one of the issues with going over this issue right now is we haven't had that discussion. We don't have all the options on the table right now, and the discussion today is about getting some of these options on the table. So, Dan, to respond to you, I think we want to consider all of these options. I mean, clearly it's we have to do our due diligence to make sure that we've uncovered every approach that we can think of in the group. And so we have to get those down there, and potentially expanding the core data model isn't off the table right now, right? I do agree with Dave Longley that we shouldn't bloat the core data model if there is a problem with one of the existing technologies on the table. This is a balancing process. We're trying to balance these all these things. To respond to what John said, it is true that you can do hashes and store them in IPFS and use content addressable kind of pointers to these data structures, but also keep in mind that a lot of these protocols have to do with actually sending the real data over from point A to point B, and there are regulations in a variety of different industries that do not allow you to store this data on IPFS. And so, you know, I'm familiar with the kind of the hashing the documents and putting the data somewhere else and kind of hiding it in IPFS, but that definitely does not work for a number of the use cases that we have that have regulatory requirements that the actual data itself never leaves the personal data store of the person. So in those cases, I don't think we can do what you're suggesting. But that said, I'd really love for you to expand on exactly what libraries you were using and what the process was, and that might either show us that you can actually do that, or it might give someone else a different idea of how we could do it in a JWT. Okay, so I think hopefully that went. And discuss, hopefully that covered all the points. I think fundamentally, this is not a problem with linked data signatures, right? So the whole reason we're having this discussion is we found technology that's widely deployed that people would like us to use that is not capable of doing the thing that we need it to do for certain use cases. And so there's another question, you know, around, like Dave Longley said, we could just say, look, there are limitations in JWT, and here they are, or here are the ways that you could solve them, right? And you can you know, dump the set of claims on IPFS, and then you can do signatures like that. But that solution is more difficult to implement and deploy than just using a linked data signature, right? The only downside with linked data signatures is that they don't have as much library support, and they haven't gone through a standardization process yet. So great discussion. I think we should start getting a lot of these things down in the issue and get some solid proposals down. I think that'll help us make some good progress.
All right, any other comments or thoughts on this for today? Okay, so we have 6 minutes left. I do not want to try to start another issue right now. What I would like to do instead is ask, is there anything else that anyone has a question about based on what we've discussed today? That would be you, Manu.
Sorry, I did want to add one more thing. We should get folks from the Jose Working Group or the JWT group to join us on the call and give us their opinion on this. I think we should just provide a set of requirements and ask them how they would solve the problem with JWTs. I think we have been criticized rightly in the past for saying JWTs don't work for something when we have not had folks from that group specifically on the call trying to work through the problem with us.
Okay. So I'm actually writing an action on the chairs to arrange for JWT folks to be on the call. For a discussion.
And let me add one more thing to that. We should not get them into the group until we have a very we've at least this group has internalized the set of problems that we have around JWTs. We've documented it appropriately in the issue tracker. I think then is the right time to bring the JWT folks in.
I'm not going to list it as an action. I'm not listing that as an action right now because there's nothing that can be done on it until we've worked through these issues. Okay. Let's see. Okay. Any other comments? Okay. Thank you, everyone, and thanks for bearing with us as we sort of work out the process for our particular group. Things usually smooth out as we go, and again, we may be shifting to, you know, a W3C group fairly soon too. Where we'll have a new discussion on process. Okay. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks all. Bye.
Talk with you next week.
Cool. Thanks.
Cheers.
Bye.